Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Everybody loves a lover. I'm a lover. Everybody loves me. Anyhow, that's how I feel. Wow, I feel just like a Pollyanna.
I lived in Scottsdale, Arizona for a couple years. I know it's like a lot more humid in Texas than it is in Arizona, but when you can like fry an egg on the pavement, it's like hot is hot. And it's like not like you're like spending that much time outside, you know? You just like stay inside. It's kind of like winter time in like really wintry places.
Yeah, that's true. Well, let me just do a little brief formal intro to our dear listeners. Hello, and welcome to yet another fabulous installment of your favorite podcast, In Bed with Nick and Megan, starring the inimitable Nick Offerman.
Hello.
And his poor downtrodden bride, Megan Mullally.
Aww.
And specially guest starring today, Jonna Von Vanness. Everybody was calling you JVN. Is that an actual thing, or is that just people saying JVN for no?
It's just my handle on Instagram and Twitter. So I think it's like it's JVN Jonathan. They're both three syllables. I don't know. I think maybe it's people like an acronym or something.
Cute.
People like an icon is what they
people
like.
People like a Jonathan.
And you, my friend, are one.
Yes, you
get
are.
Get out of here. Thank
cutie.
You so much.
Well, we lived through the entire first incarnation of Queer Eye, and now you guys are back with the next installment. And I have to say that, you know, I mean, it's so good. It's like I think I burst into tears at the end of half of the episodes. It's so moving. Some of the people that you guys have had on are such unlikely candidates for a makeover. It's really amazing.
Thank you so much. It means so much to hear you say that. And obviously, I've been I'm a massive fan of yours. So to hear you say that, thank you so much. And yeah. I know when I met you the first time at the Emmys, I think it was 2 years ago, I almost shot myself. So I love you so much. And I'm so happy that you're a fan. And
I remember that. Actually, was that, I feel like it might have been, oh gosh, I think it was it when I was hosting the SAG Awards? Could that have been? No,
it was Emmys, because yeah. I've never been to the SAG Awards. I'd remember.
Yeah, I remember that you guys were like the first people I saw on the red carpet. It was so nice. Everybody was so friendly and nice.
It's such amazing energy. I hope we get to have more than like 20 people together safely again sometimes, like soon.
One day.
Not only for the Emmys, but, you know, for like safety and communication and like, you know, all of us being together and stuff. Like, not just the Emmys, obviously.
You know, yeah. The Emmys, safety, communication, and barbecue.
In the Olympics.
In the
Olympics. I just want to watch gymnastics, please.
Well, so the Olympics, so what do you think? I mean, the Olympics aren't happening, so what are you going to do?
They
YouTube?
Are not happening. They're just not happening this year. They're going to happen next year.
They'll happen.
Just a little postponed. Oh, yeah. Well, really what I've been doing is NBC Sports has been replaying like every ladies team final from like every Olympics. Like recently, like I watched the 96 women's team final. I watched the 2008 women's team final. Also, they just did like a massive like figure skating binge where you could just watch like all of this year's like best, like all of this year's kind of Grand Prix season, but like right in a row. So those were fun. I also will just like accidentally like go into like very deep, like I'll get lost on Instagram Explore page because my Explore page is all figure skating, gymnastics, hair stuff, makeup stuff, and like topless gay men. So that's basically what my whole Explore page is. And sometimes when I see a figure skating thing or a gymnastics thing, I will just get into a hole because like it'll be like, you know, some fan page of like a figure skater or a gymnast. And then I go on Wikipedia and I see like what place they got in every competition, and then I go to that competition on YouTube and I'll be like looking at like 1987 World Gymnastics Championships for like 6 hours.
So
like,
you're like
days to it.
So you're like full immersion gymnastics right now. Yeah,
and figure skating. Yeah,
uh-huh.
Major.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's amazing. Wait, now tell me if this is true or not, because I've had a theory for many years that every time there's an Olympics, people, you know, like say it's gymnastics and somebody does like 2 1/4, you know, spins, you know, like aerial whatevers. And then everybody's like, okay, that's it. That's the most anybody could ever do. And then 4 years later, when they do it again, they do 3 or 2.5. So, and then they're like, okay, that's it. So I feel like every time people get more and more, you know, they just keep topping themselves and it just keeps getting more and more state of the art. But how could that be? Like, I don't understand how it happens so fast where people do the impossible pretty much on a regular basis.
Well, right now we're really seeing in figure skating that phenomenon, I think, more than ever in terms of the quad in female skating, because really, I think Miki Ondo was the first female figure skater to attempt it in competition, which was in 2006, I think. And really since her, like no one has done it. And then now, like all of a sudden, there's like 6 Russian skaters who can all do like several quads. And then there's an American junior skater who is a 2-time U.S. national champion. She has a quad lutz. There's also a two Japanese skaters who are doing quad sao and quad cho. And so this is the first time where I think for a long time people would have said that like female skaters will never be able to do quads, and now they're really doing them. And there is a really ferocious debate about like the safety of it and if they push, you know, these young girls too far and, you know, et cetera. It's interesting. And also in gymnastics, because Simone Biles is actually someone who's been doing like some really state of the art stuff that people said would never be able to be done. Just like a couple months ago, she posted a double layout dismount off of the beam, which is unheard of. It was into the pit. So she hasn't like landed it yet, but just really incredible work. So I don't know, but I think that the reason why these athletes are able to do it is because it's like the training is like, it gets better and smarter. Like I was like, you can also interrupt me because I could literally talk about this for like 50 minutes without anyone getting a word in edgewise. So please like tell me to like shut the fuck up if I'm talking too much.
It.
You are like, a featured guest. You're doing great.
But like I grew up competitive swimming and I was like really into it. Like in like eight, like I started in 7th grade, and that was kind of like how like I got a lot more active and like into sports generally speaking. And it was funny. I was talking to this really competitive like current swimmer like a couple months ago, and I was saying like, oh, is it still like, you know, for freestyle, like you're going to reach forward and like draw an S under the water. And he's like, oh, that's funny. You must have like trained in like the 90s. Cause like, that's like really 90s swimming technique. Like now we're doing, it's much more like a straight line under the body. And it's just like, you know, for a while, like the working theory will be like, do this kind of twist or do it this way. And then people just develop better training techniques and it gets more like streamlined and state of the art over time. So I feel like they can push themselves more.
I love that. And I'm going to wrap all this into a question for you, because the thing I love about your show is that I have a life philosophy that one should always maintain the attitude of a student. My sensei who taught me kabuki theater told me this. It's a Zen koan. And the idea is if you always have something to work on, because we're humans, we're never done, you know, we're never perfect. We come out of the oven and we say, great. We always have something to improve on. And the thing I love about your show is it gives you a menu where it's like, well, okay, maybe my grooming is on point. Not, mine's not, but maybe this hypothetical person's is. But how's your living space? How's your, you know, how's your comportment? How's your hygiene, et cetera? There's always something to be improved on. And Megan helps me with that, which I am very grateful for. But to apply that mentality to this idea of training, I was going to ask you, because there's an element of you guys are sort of the super friends of life coaching in a way, if I may. And so to people in this high octane subject matter of the Olympics or like top level athletics of any sort, people that are losing like a year of competition or a season or whatever their sport may be, what would your advice be as a gentle philosopher to people who, you know, maybe this is the year they were going to be able to dunk the best, but they're not going to get on the court until 2021. What is your advice to those people?
I don't know, Queen. I would be so fucking pissed if I was an athlete right now. Like, just because you do. I mean, seriously, like, I'm sure there are figure skaters and gymnasts that, like, when they get born, like, when they start training, when they're, like, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, they're like, all right, like, I'm going to peak here. Like, this is going to be our game. I mean, it's people that train like that, it is like that. So to have this year of movement, it is, you know, so I guess, you know, it's like, you have to make with it what you can. I mean, I'm not that high level of an athlete. For me, I'm like, you know, I love figure skating and I love doing gymnastics myself. And like, obviously we're not doing that now. So like, I found this like fake ice that's like poly ice that like I blistered the shit out of my hands, like setting up in my garage so I can like fake ice skate in the garage. And then I ordered like a tumble track, like an inflatable tumble thing to put in the yard so I can like still tumble. So it's like, obviously like the fact that I have like resources to be able to order that online is really fierce. So if I'm sure all of these athletes right now are figuring out like, how do I train at home? Like I follow Lori Hernandez on Instagram. She was like running beam routines in her hallway, like on a yoga mat. Like, you know, I think that these athletes are just trying to figure out. I follow this other gymnast who I'm obsessed with, who's a 2008 silver Olympic medalist. She was also a 3-time world champion, Chelsea Memel. And she owns her own gymnastics studio because like she's like a teacher, you know, and teaches like she's like a coach. And so I think she's still been training there because she like owns it, but it's closed to like students. But I swear to God, I think she's like mounting a comeback. She's never looked better. She's like, I think she's like 30. So like coming back in gymnastics would be like insane, but she's literally never been stronger. She's so fucking amazing. I'm so obsessed. Follow her. Memo on Instagram. Oh my God, I'm obsessed. I really hope she comes back. But yeah, I mean, so, but I think that for so many people that like, you know, cause I mean, you really, for so many sports, like you rely on the equipment to be able to train. So I think so many people are, you know, those athletes are figuring out like, how do I train now? Like they're having to figure that out for themselves. So I guess from like a Zen point, it'd be like, honey, yoga. And all of those athletes probably needed more yoga anyway, because it's like a great cross training to like help like equal out your body if you're always twisting the same way and like training the same skills. So like doing the yoga, honey, is very balanced. It's very symmetrical, very grounding. It'll help you like accept what you can't change, honey. So maybe the yoga or just like fucking rage it out. Because honestly, I would still be really pissed. If I was a Olympic athlete, like I would still be in my like grief process, like throwing shit at the wall. Like I think I'd be really fucking pissed.
Do you think that the level that people are at right now with gymnastics and other sports like that, you know, this this really high level that everybody trains at and performs at, will allow people to keep doing their sport longer or not as long?
Well, I think it's from the figure skating perspective, we're definitely seeing that it's shortening the careers of people, like men and women, just because it's so much more intense. So injuries happen, you know, more often. Like to be a 2-time defending Olympic champion or even 2-time Olympian, I think is, you know, harder and harder. So I definitely think that it is probably, you know, on the whole shortening careers generally, like at that elite level.
I mean, I was in a ballet company when I was in junior high and high school. And just for those years, it was only for 5 years, but just that amount of time, you know, wearing point shoes, completely screwed my feet up, you know? So I can only imagine what something like gymnastics or figure skating would do.
I started growing some major bunions on my feet since I started skating, but I'm kind of just like so grateful that I get the opportunity to grow a bunion on my foot from skating. And I'm like, bunion me up, sister. I'll just wear fucking slippers when I'm having sex or something. Because it is unsightly, that big toe bunion, honey. I mean, she's really approaching a right angle status, but it has kind of started to go back to normal since I haven't been able to skate for 8 weeks.
Well, maybe you can get them removed.
Well, yeah, just not cramming them into those tight skates, but figure skates are so tight around your foot because you really don't want any wiggle room in there, which is something I never knew about until I started skating.
So let me go back a second. There's a poly ice product that you can get to put down in your garage that you can skate on with ice skates.
Yeah, it's called Polyglide, and I was like, I don't think this stuff works. But then I saw people like doing it online, and I was like, I'm not gonna do it. And then I was like, oh fuck, I really miss putting on skates. I need to just try it. And so it does feel a little different. Obviously, it's not ice; it's like plastic. But yeah, it's really cool. And you just slam it together like a jigsaw puzzle. And if you're a hockey player, you can practice on it. If you're a skier, you can practice on it. It was cool.
Do you need a local Zamboni driver to come by like once a month?
That is actually the only thing that I'm like, TBH a little tiny bit worried about is I'm like, because I don't want to like create a bunch of plastic waste in the world. So I hope that it like, again, it does have like, I've noticed there's like shavings. So I don't know like how, I don't know if you can like, fucking like blowtorch that thing and like re-smooth it back out. Like, I don't know what a plastic Zamboni looks like. Or maybe you can just scratch the fuck out of it and it doesn't matter. Who knows? I don't know why I'm cussing so much, but I am.
We fucking love it.
Oh, great.
You're in the right place.
This is a slight callback to what we were talking about before, but we've been watching American Idol. That's right. And okay, they're down to the top 20. That's where we're at right now anyway, top 20. And you know, you remember when American Idol started, there were like 20, there were 19 people who basically really couldn't sing at all, and then there was Kelly Clarkson. So it was like a freak accident.
Oh, there was?
Kind of, more or less. I mean, more or less. I mean, there weren't that many really good people.
I'm gonna step up for my boy Justin Guarini real quick.
Yeah, I think Justin was a good singer.
He was a good singer. Good.
He's cute as he can be with his curly hair.
He was all right.
But we take your point.
Okay, but what I'm trying to say is that now there are 20 kids. They're like teenagers. They're like, oh, I don't know. The youngest is maybe, well, 16.
There's a couple 16.
There's a few 16-year-olds, 17, 18, who all seem like they've won 19 Grammys. I mean, it is insane. Every single
of
them are singing their fucking faces off. It is nuts. And I don't know when, in 20 years, because it started 20 years ago, it's unbelievable how much better. And not only are they singing, and I mean, they sound like a record when they sing. They don't make any mistakes. There's no pitch issues. And not only that, but they all, almost all, many, half of them play a musical instrument really, really well, or two. Some play keyboard and guitar and write their own music. And it's really good.
Oh, that, I bet. I mean, no offense to musicians who like, you know, sing really well and don't play instruments, but I bet that playing multiple instruments would make you sing better because you would understand like musicality and like where the notes are supposed to live, like on an instrument and how that translates to your voice and stuff. I feel like that would probably help if you were a musician to like know how to play instruments. Like, I bet that helps them sing better.
Yeah, I think so. But I mean, I don't know how they've, you know, just on their own. These are just kids. They're not in the business.
Well, maybe they're Suzuki little babies. Like, maybe they like started practicing the violin and the flute and stuff like with a Suzuki teacher when they were like two. So maybe they just been like listening to pitch stuff since they were like little tiny little babies.
Well, yeah. And I feel like the internet has a lot to do with all of this because these kids are growing up online and they can watch videos of whatever they want. Like, you know, you can learn to play guitar or play piano YouTube.
And anything. Like, I mean, when I started making, I make furniture is one of my jobs. And my bread and butter is like a slab, Nakashima style slab dining room table. And when I started making those, it was it was a much more obscure reach. Like I had to go to the library. I mean, you know, and I had to find the information. Nowadays, if you can YouTube anything, like if you YouTube knife makers or blacksmiths, suddenly they're everywhere because people can learn these skills and acquire the tools and materials they need from the internet. And so you just anybody in the most remote area can learn how to make like incredible versions of anything. So I think in that way, our society, whether it's figure skating or singing or knife making, we're being enlarged by that spread of information.
But I don't know what's driving people to perfect their skills to such a degree at such a young age, because it didn't used to be like that. I mean, if there was a 16-year-old who could really sing, it was a what?
Money. Like, well, because it's like knowledge is power, right? And it's like really what this content is. It's teaching people how to, when you can share this content around the world like this, it gives you knowledge. And with knowledge comes more power. And when you see, you know, what the house that someone's in or someone's driving with, so it's like, well, if I can sing really well and if I can win that competition, honey, look at Kelly Clarkson now. Has her own talk show. She's like, I still remember to this day, the first True Life I ever saw of Kelly Clarkson's on MTV. Remember that like True Life MTV show?
Yes.
And Kelly Clarkson had just won American Idol and her first album came out. And I remember like they would say a quote and then the screen would kind of go like black and white over a picture. And then they would do the quote in like words as the person would say it, you know, over the screen. And I remember she was like in this shop and she said like, I remember winning American Idol and saying like, I don't have to worry about money anymore. And I remember that being in like seventh grade. And it's like, you know, you got to talk to your parents about money. And like, you know, money was such a big issue. Like, how am I going to go to college? How am I going to support myself when I get older? Like, how's it going to happen? I remember like you look at Kelly Clarkson and you're like, well, she wins American Idol. And if she's going to do all that, like she's never has to worry about money again. That's what I'm going to do. That's what drives people to it. It's like there's such a fear around like success and making a way for yourself from the time you're brought into the world and hear about how will I afford college? How will I get accepted? How am I going to make a life? And I think more and more, not to be, you know, dreary, but it's true that that path is more and more unclear and shiftier and harder for people. And so on the one hand, the information is amazing that people have access to it to enrich their lives and make themselves better at it. But for all the people that caught up or they get caught up in the whole comparison and like, well, they're doing this and they're doing that. Like, well, I can never do this. It's really a double-edged sword because it can either really lift you up or it can really beat you down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And the thing that's cool about these kids is for the most part, they seem like they're really serious about music, that they're not just doing it to be famous, which is the bad side of all of that stuff. They seem like they have, you know, I mean, it's hard to really tell from what you see on a show like that, but it does kind of feel like a lot of them have some integrity, which is pretty cool, and aren't completely starry-eyed. Like they're at such a level of sophistication with their music already that it's kind of crazy. And, you know, there's a real seriousness that goes into acquiring that kind of skill. You know, it can't just be that like, okay, I'm just going to get good enough at this to become famous. You know, it's like a real calling or a real,
I don't know why both things can't exist at the same time. Like, can't someone want to become, and it's not necessarily even famous, but it's like if you want to become a music teacher or a mentor or whatever, it's like you have like really good at it to make a living.
Yeah, that's different though. I'm just talking about people who think that being famous somehow solves some kind of problem or something, you know, solves all your problems or makes, being able to do what, having more doors open to you and that kind of thing is incredible. But, you know, in terms of just the 100%, just the fame part, it's not very rewarding, really. I just want to point out that you're in a closet.
Yeah, fully in a closet.
Why did you choose the closet?
Because I mean, like a really echoey house. It's like a little cute. I'm closing this door. It's like a cute little baby house, and that I'm like so grateful to be able to get. But it's super echoey, and like you can really, because it's like, you know, tile. It's like a lake house, so it's real cabiny. So this is the only room with like cabin or with like carpet and something to like absorb it.
Nice. And also we established earlier on that you and I have the same hairstyle.
Which I'm so happy about.
Cute. I know, me too. Are you kidding? And yours is kind of like wavy and curly right now, which is very cute.
I have that, you know, wavy texture. And this Texas humidity, honey, is really bringing it out of me.
I feel like I think of you more with, you know, the blowout.
Yeah, I've been, it's weird. I always thought that I was a hairdresser for like 13 years, and I always had a lot of clients that would be like, you know, models or people who just like blow out their hair a lot for like TV or whatever. I worked in LA for a long time. And so when they would get breakage, I would always be like, oh my gosh, like, you know, you must be doing something wrong, or like the hairstylist must be doing something wrong because you really shouldn't be having breakage. And then when I started doing Queer Eye and started blow drying my hair every day, I all of a sudden got like all this breakage around my hairline. And now I'm like, for like a couple of years now, I've been on this like, let me wear my hair curly kit, because it really like, because like I used to blow dry my hair like once a month, like just if I felt like it, you know. You hairdressers, I think a lot of times, at least I was a type of hairdresser that was notoriously disheveled because I was so busy getting everyone else ready. Like I always looked rode hard and put away soaking wet, like always. So now I'm trying to do a lot more air dry because my hair needs a break.
Okay, so I have what is probably the most serious and important question of the podcast for you right now, which is, I am going to cut Nick's hair this week, and I need you to tell me what to do.
What tools do you have?
Well, we have, what do we have?
We've got scissors, random orbit sander. I think it's a DeWalt with 80 grit and 120 grit. we have a peanut, a little trimmer with the attachments.
It has all the attachments?
Yeah.
Okay. And then
one through four.
Okay. And then like a one, like an 01, an 02, an 03, or is it like quarter, half, three quarter, one?
No, it's one through four.
Can someone get it? Can I see it? I need to see it.
Yeah, hang on.
I need to see the guard.
Yeah, while he's doing that, I wanted to ask you, like, you seemed hesitant when we were talking about fame. Well, what are your feelings about it?
Well, not like hesitant. I just didn't want to seem like I was being a judgmental dick to 16-year-olds, but because I haven't seen the season, you know? So I guess I was just saying that, like, to me, like, I just was wondering that, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting to become successful, and I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting to become famous. And I just think that you can have a desire to be well known and to share, because I don't because like when I was, you know, working so hard doing, and I still do work extremely hard, but like when I was doing Gay of Thrones pre-Queer Eye and really wanted to like make it, you know, and like I wanted to be really good at entertaining people, and I wanted to be funny, and I wanted to be a great hairdresser, but I wanted to share that with people. But I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting to become, you know, really good at your job, really good at your craft, and share it with loads of people. I mean, and part of why I wanted to share it and become well known is because I wanted to, like, you know, wield the power of my platform with like shedding stigma around all the things that I'm working on shedding stigma around. So it's like, I just think it's okay to want to be, like, you know, quote, famous, and also be really good at what you want to do. I just think both can exist at the same time.
Yeah. And I 100% agree with everything you just said. And I've felt the same way that I think that it is nice to be able to make people laugh or provide an entertainment or to them in some way that's going to be beneficial, whether it's in a funny way or a not funny way, or to provide, information, and that's all fantastic. I feel like there's some connotation to being the word famous, there's a connotation that goes along with it that implies something kind of skanky, you know, that,
yeah,
you know, you just want people to love you because you have a big ego and you don't give a shit about them, but you just want, you know, I know there's something
bad about it. Yes. I mean, I still feel really uncomfortable talking about myself as like famous or like referring to myself as like a celebrity or like any of that still makes me feel uncomfortable because of that negative connotation. And that's like, that's been such a fear for me. Like, just, I talk a lot about that in my stand-up, and I find myself writing a lot of comedy about like, and just writing generally about not wanting to lose myself in the sense of like what got me to where I am. Cause really that was that I'm kind of a forever student, like what you were saying, and that I really like to work hard. I like to create and I like to learn, and I didn't want to lose that or feel like entitled to something because I got somewhere. And I think that's such a struggle, you know, because when you have people around like being like, I love you, you're this, you're that, you're whatever. It's like, I never want to believe it too much. Like, I mean, obviously you want to have like a strong sense of, you know, self-confidence, but you don't, I mean, you can always tell when someone's blowing smoke up your ass, or at least I think I can.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is like most of the time, I don't feel like that about people who approach me like from a fan perspective. I really feel like such a connection to people who come up to me and they're like, you know, whether it was something that I wrote or shared or said that, you know, really helped them, that I feel like is so meaningful to me. I more mean smoke, like, you know, when you're like in a business meeting with someone and they're like, you're so this or so that, and you're like, I'm just a person. I know I'm not the funniest comedian. I know I'm not like the best writer, but I don't need you to convince me that you think that I'm like so brilliant. Like, I don't have that sense of like, you need to blow smoke up my ass. Like, I'm still me. So I know what you're saying. There is that weird connotation.
And I feel like you are very much, you're very, you know, what you see is what you get. Like, I feel like there's not a lot of, there's no artifice to how you, you know, present yourself. And that helps with all that stuff. And I feel like Nick and I are pretty much like that. Like, we just kind of are who we are, and we don't have a different persona, really. I mean, everybody does to a small degree, I think. You know, you kind of have to.
In life, we all wear our masks.
Yeah.
Sorry to get Aristotelian on you.
Well, I'm glad we got into that, but I think that Nick's haircut is much more important.
Yeah, it is really important.
Philosophizing about fame.
So, you know, it's a peanut, it's a little.
And that's your guard. That's just the travel guard. So show me your four attachments.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, so I just want to see the four attachments. Oh, okay. So here's the thing. Those are great, but you might want to do ones that are a little bit smaller, because those are like big jumps, right? Like, right. So if you have like a 1, a 2, and a 3, and a 4, like you need like a half, like you need like a 0. Well, actually the 0 is just the guard, just nothing, but you need like a half, even like a quarter and a half and a 3/4 and the 1. And I need like a 1.25 and a 1.5 to make it detailed, like so that it flows. Cause if you just go from like a 1 to a 2, it's going to be looking like all steppy. But also I would just say this. Nick's got a great head of hair, and even if it does grow a little bit, it won't be ugh. I would suggest only really approaching this, like his temple, right? Like right here, like the sideburn, like you can kind of soften up your sideburn. So like you can take the teeth face down where you want your sideburn, where you want the sideburn to start. So if you're happy with how far it goes down, you know, it's okay. I would take it up just like a smidge, you know, like take that chop up a little bit. Then with the teeth facing up, you start with the clipper on the base and you just make like little C shapings to kind of transition it from like skin to hair. So it's not just like a, you know, rectangle of hair sticking below his ear, you know, so it kind of fades up a little. So you could do that.
C-shapings?
Like little C shapings with the, like with the clippers, mm-hmm. like little, make little mm-hmm. C shapings with,
okay.
You hold it in your hand, you make little C shapings. It's like very little C shapings.
Yeah, I getcha.
But I would just approach, like, and then like his back hairline, like his neck, you know, like that hair that just lives like clearly below the neckline, you know, that's just like that furry, there's usually like two columns of it. Mm-hmm. Everyone's is like a little different. Take that hair off with no guard, or you could even shave it off with a razor. But I would just suggest like that's like what a cleanup is. Like, just do his temples and do like the neckline. But if you get into doing like his entire haircut, it might be okay. The more you do it, the better you're going to get at it. And long term, you might save like a bunch of money, which is cute if you got really good at it. But it also could really look like fucking shit for a long time. Because like fucking up a haircut, it's definitely going to take 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks for it to start to look normal. And then if you really mess it up because you don't know how to do it, it's not going to be that much better the second time. So you really are just risking like several kooky haircuts.
It would have been cuter.
Okay, then just go for it.
He doesn't care. He has no vanity. But I feel like we should order a different set of clippers.
You just need more guards. You need more guards. I would do like a wall, or I like the peanuts too, but I like the peanuts for detailing. Like, I like those for like the edges. If you want to do like a head, like a whole haircut, you need like, you know, big clippers. And then those are like, the peanuts are more like T-edgers. So you want like clippers and then you want like T-edgers. Then I would also order a pair of hair cutting shears and a pair of thinning shears. So if there's a hardcore like step or like mismatch or like something that you don't know how to blend together that's just looking crazy, like the thinning shears can help soften like a weird thing. Like this, the scissors with the teeth in them, you know? I don't know if you've ever seen your hairdresser use the one with the teeth. So a thinning shear, then a hair cutting shear is what I would say you really need.
Okay. And what brand of clippers do you recommend?
I like Wahl. I like Andes. I like...
What did you say? Wahl?
W-A-H-L.
Yeah. And then also I really like A-N-D-I-S, Andes. And then I also really like the peanut brand is great. What else? I mean, really a lot of them are great. They really are all... pretty great. The thing with clippers is like they don't like to be dropped and you need to like take care of them. So like, you know, get all the hair out of the little buzzers when you're like, don't put it back in your drawer like full of shit all up in there, because there's like a motor down there and it doesn't like to have like clipping shoved in it. Like,
and
you want
to hit it with a drop of oil every few times.
I know that they do like that and I know that you should. I honestly never did that. I just wiped it off with my antimicrobial wipes, you know, and then like disinfected it and then we get the hair out of it. I'm sure if I oiled it, it would have lasted longer, but yeah.
NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partners. NetCredit, credit to the people.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
What other tips? Now that we're here in our house all the time, I, from time to time, trap Nick in a corner and put like moisturizer on his face, but that's about all I can get away with. But he's getting a little better. When we were first together, he made some snide remark one time about me having a science lab going on my side of the bathroom. But now he's a little more scientific now than he used to be.
Yeah, and skincare is a science. I would say for men, especially in you know, now in quarantine, if you're taking that hour to go outside and get, you know, your fresh air and your fresh, you know, sunshine, especially if you live in Southern California, the sun is so incredibly strong in California. It's really so incredibly strong everywhere. It gets stronger and stronger. So finding a mineral-based sunscreen that is good for our water systems and easy on the environment is really important. And getting a mineral sunscreen, because mineral sunscreens are classically just chalkier and harder to absorb. They're classically less friendly if you are someone who mixes your if you're someone who applies your sunscreen over your makeup, mineral sunscreens are historically less forgiving. But there people have different favorites, but Biossance just came out with the mineral sunscreen that I'm obsessed with. They're like squalene, plus mineral sheer sunscreen. So it's reef safe, water safe, mineral based. It absorbs so quickly and easily, but if you're someone, even if you're going outside for that hour, it's, and then once we're allowed to go outside for more, obviously, really protecting your skin from the sun is the most important thing you can do for sun care and for skin care and for your overall health. That is really the most important thing. So getting, you know, your loved ones into a sunscreen ritual that works for them and isn't annoying and that they can just do every, because like I put that sunscreen on my face every morning. And even if I don't leave my house, it is, the squalane is so nice and it doesn't feel like a classic, like thick sunscreen. I go through a lot of it because I also put it all over my forearms. It's just like my morning thing. Anything that sees the sun, I put it on.
So wait, you said Biossance and then you said are those two different things? Squalene?
Squalene plus mineral. It's like squalene plus mineral sunscreen. It's their main sunscreen.
How do you spell squalene for the listener?
S-Q-U-A-L-A-N-E.
Okay. All right. And those are two different, and Biossance and squalene are two different things.
No, Biossance is the company that makes it.
Oh, okay.
Biossance is just the company. Yeah.
Got it.
And then the other thing I would suggest that just came to my mind is that for anyone who has, that gets hair color, especially if you're like have a bright color or like a color that's like not your natural one, and like extending the life of your color has always been an issue, and you're like, oh my God, I haven't seen my fucking colorist for like 6 weeks and like it is fading a lot or whatever. Staying more on like cold showers helps, like not just soaking your head in like steaming hot showers helps, because anytime you're like really putting your hair in like hot water, it's going to release color if you do have colored hair. Mm-hmm. So trying to do more cold water on your hair. You can still take a hot shower, but just the washing hair part, try to do cold. And also try to like not wash it as much. That also really helps extend the life of your color and also helps your ends not get shitty so fast. So just like wash it less is generally good, especially if you're not leaving your house. Unless you did leave your house to go to the grocery store, then you do need to fucking take a shower and wash your hair, like as soon as you get home.
I cut my own hair about 2 weeks ago. I have the easiest haircut in the world because it's just straight across the bottom.
Kind of a hard haircut, actually. People fuck that haircut up all the time. And you did a really good job.
I had one little piece in the back that was too long, and Nick cut it off.
It was a collaborative
effort. Right in the middle.
Oh, it's hard to get there. It's so hard to get there.
Yeah.
Now, if he goes back to touch it up, make sure that you have him touch it up with your head looking down. Like, stand up straight, but then look to the ground, and then have him do it again with you putting your head up. Both angles. Make sure that chunk isn't there.
Cute. I love that. So back to sun damage. I'm literally writing these tips down. Back to sun damage. So I've always been really paranoid about it because my father had skin cancer. So I just never really go out in the sun. I don't like it. I mean, I like it.
That's also the why your fucking face hasn't changed since 2003, bitch. Looking fucking gorgeous, looking 12.
Seriously,
not taking sun. If you're into like, you know, I'm one of those people that thinks like aging is like a privilege, and like I hope to look like the Crypt Keeper when I'm able to. I really want to just like, I'm so excited and I hope I stay around forever. But if not aging and retaining your look is important to you, not taking sun is like the most important thing. And your fucking face is such a testament. Look at you. You literally have not fucking changed for so fucking long.
Thank you. That's so nice. I feel like people ask me sometimes, and I always say, you know, I've never been out in the sun. There are a lot of things because I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't have kids.
Okay. Also, can I say this one other thing, not to get off subject, but it's kind of on subject, but I really think it makes a gigantic difference, and I do it, and I'm kind of obsessed with it. Okay. So I'm going to tell you now, so I'm not really asking. Do you want to hear? Is it okay?
Yes, please.
Okay. My girlfriend had a breast reduction this one time, and she had to sleep on her back because, like, she couldn't sleep on her side while they were, like, while she was recovering. And she also was someone who, like, used to do, like, in the, like, no shade for filler, like, filler up your life, like, give me the Juvederm, do it all, it's, like, fine. But she just used to do a lot more of it. And then when she had her breast reduction, she started sleeping on her back because she, like, had to, like, you know, encased in, like, two body pillows, like, shaped in a U because she, like, couldn't turn over while she was healing. And after she came back, after I saw her again, I was like, girl, like, did you switch doctors or something? Because your face is looking fucking incredible. Like, what did you, like, is there some new filler or something? She's like, no, bitch, I haven't been anywhere for the longest. And so it was like, okay. And then, like, 2 weeks later, I saw her, I was like, what the fuck? You look so good. What is going on? And she's like, okay, I haven't done anything. I don't know what you're talking about. Shut up, is in LA. Like, everyone's always doing something. It was sleeping on her back, just like not sleeping on her face with her, like, face crunched into a pillow. Cause when you think about it, that's like 8 to 10 hours a night. If you're like one of those people that's all up on your side, like shoving your face into a pillow and like going back and forth from side to side, like all up on your face. And if you think of the gravity, just like pulling your face back every night for 8 hours, as opposed to like pulling it forward.
Well, okay, this is going to sound
crazy.
Okay, this is going to sound crazy, but I somehow always, I mean, I just, that's just common sense that if you're sleeping on your side and you're mushing your face, then it's going
to
stay like that. Well, no, okay. I mean, I don't mean that. You're very smart and very intuitive. I'm just saying that for some reason that dawned on me a long time ago before I heard about that, because I have heard that said a little bit, you know, from a couple of people over the years.
She's the first one to tell me.
Well, no, but so what I did was, I mean, for many years, I mean, gosh, I don't even know, probably since I was about 30, when I start off on my back, but then if I turn on my side, I always like smooth my face up so that I'm pulling my face away from my nose, you know, like toward my ear more. And I've always done that. And I think it does make a difference.
That makes so much sense to me.
Yeah, I've never said that out loud to anybody. This is the first time I even said that out loud.
Not intuitive to me ever. I also, like, my grandma, like, she isn't around anymore, but she, like, never did anything. And I don't know if it's because I'm biased, because I was, like, obsessed with her, because she was just, like, really smart and kind of a bitch, and she didn't take no shit from nobody, but she, like, loved me a lot, so I was, like, obsessed with her. but I just felt like she got prettier and prettier and prettier and prettier, like, even on her deathbed. I was like, bitch, you are looking gorgeous. Like, she just knew how to, like, pull together a blow dry for a week and put on some pearls, and she always looked great. So I was just, like, someone that was, like, and also I've met so many clients over the years that just became obsessed with chasing their faces, like doing a little bit of this and then doing a little bit of that, and then it does this, so they got to do this, and they're just like, no. So I was like, I just was always scared to, like, I just didn't want to open that can of worms.
Yeah, it becomes like a vicious cycle, right? Yeah.
Yes. And so then, like, but just experiencing the thing that I just told you about with my friend who had the breast reduction, I was like, that was the first time where it, like, ever really crossed my mind, because I never really cared. But then I was like, oh, holy shit, it's such a thing.
That's cool. Well, I, you know, for me, my mom lived to be 97, and she looked really pretty. She didn't really have many wrinkles on her face. I mean, you know, she was definitely 97, you know, there's no avoiding it, but she looked really good. All things considered. And I feel like,
pool.
So part of it is genetic, but I guess I do, because I have a lot of, you know, I have a lot of friends my age, and I do feel like there's, like, less, I'm definitely aging, but I have less actual just big wrinkles for whatever reason. And that, I think,
well,
that's the sun thing, not
it's
no
the sun.
Yeah.
No, it's because the sun, like, it depletes, it, like, the sun damage, like, depletes your skin's ability to make collagen and to make, like, it just, it makes it, it accelerates it faster. Like, the free radicals that the sun damage causes, like, accelerates, like, your body's use of things that don't replicate over time.
Mm.
You know, like, there's, like, a finite amount of give to the skin over time. So that's, yeah, it's good. It's smart.
Yeah. Well, Nick is starting to wear sunscreen every day now because he does have sun damage. He has it on his neck, but a little bit on his forehead, too.
Let's keep it positive.
But you're gorgeous. You're gorgeous, honey.
He is gorgeous.
Absolutely stunning. Take your top off and we'll see if you have any sun damage on your torso. And we'll just make sure.
Do it.
I don't think I have any. I just checked. I mean, I would love to, but
everybody listening to the podcast wants to hear you with
Nick. I'm sorry.
People listening to the podcast want to hear you without your shirt on.
Okay. And we do want to see you shirtless more. It's just gorgeous. Like, I think you just want to see it. You're like this like furniture fucking builder, like fucking gorgeous man, you know? I just love a shirtless person.
I have to say this is the first time that I think Nick is getting a little, he must have a crush on you. He's getting a little shy because this is the first time I've ever known him to refuse an offer to take his shirt off.
That's not true.
I feel cheated.
You should feel flattered.
I think, I'm very grateful for your compliments. it's not something I get asked very often, if ever.
Oh, gosh. He usually takes it off when you're not least expecting it. When we'd have like a couple over for dinner to our house, like people that we really didn't know very well. It was like our first kind of double date with them. One time I remember, he's giving the tour, giving the tour of the house so a couple of times he did the thing where we get to the bedroom and he took his shirt off and starts unzipping his pants, flip the lights off. And then one time he did it, we got to the master bathroom the bathroom off of our bedroom and he took his shirt off, turned the lights off, took his shirt off, and then turned on the shower and got in the shower. These poor people are like freaking out.
On a tour?
Yeah, it's
just with people over for the first time.
It's good, clean fun. Giving
another couple
a house tour.
I feel like I've been like late for something before, like when I'm like having people over for dinner, I'm like, oh my God, I gotta like run upstairs and take a shower, but I don't do it like in front of them. But touche, honey. I love that you did that.
He's doing a bit. He's just trying to make people laugh, but he'll really commit to a bit. And then one time we were at a restaurant, we were in Mexico, which is weird because like I said, I never go out in the sun. So why we were in Mexico, I'm not really sure, but we were at dinner somewhere and we saw some people that we know, which was weird, at another table, and we were at a fancy hotel at a fancy restaurant. It wasn't even the hotel we were staying at. It was a different hotel, fancier than our hotel. And he took his shirt off in the middle of this fancy hotel and just like casually walked by the table of the people we know until they recognized him. So in other words, he's naughty. He's sowing civil unrest.
Well, I mean, I'll just add that in each instance, a hearty laugh ensued.
Yeah, no, it's all for...
as a result of my pageantry.
But you know what it was? In all of those instances, you volunteered yourself shirtless, which is not what happened here, so I understand. So, touche, and I love that.
Oh, yeah, I guess it has to be on his terms, maybe. Interesting.
Yeah, it does have to be on your terms. I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, boundaries.
It is his torso, so
I am my own exhibitionist.
You guys, this has been
In Bed with Nick and Megan is an Earwolf production. It's produced by Megan Mullally, Kevin Bartelt, and Michael Landry. Executive produced by Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon. Music by Nancy and Beth, which can be found at www.nancyandbeth.com. If you enjoyed In Bed with Nick and Megan, make sure to rate it and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
Escape to Ocean City, Maryland. And discover a place that just feels lighter, where every day feels like Saturday and French fries are a food group, where flip-flops are always in fashion and seafood is always in season, where the boardwalk is bustling and the beach is right outside your door, where you can rise with the tide and feel like a kid again. Ocean City, Maryland, somewhere to smile about. Book your trip at OCOcean.com.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.